Well, I'll tell you, the way it looks to me, and I know it, there's so many guys coming up here. They come for work, and they all got a car full of guns, and they all want to shoot a moose or a caribou or a bear. They come in here in the spring of the year by the, where can I get a bear? Well, you ain't gonna find him in town. You go out and hunt for him. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of that game is getting killed off that way. Now look at like the army. So many guys in the army. All them guys wanna, most of them guys wanna hunt, you know. And they, most of them don't even need the meat as far as that goes. They're living out there in the base. They got everything they want to eat as far as I seen a lot of that. They want a set of moose horns. Or, well, Si come down the road one day. It's there, and it's just getting dark and live and good here and there. These guys got a moose right off the road, and all the five GIs, all they wanted was just the horns. They asked him if he wanted the meat. He said a nice moose, and he had a load of freight, and he said, "Well, I don't really want it right now." And he said, there was a car come right behind him. There were three, four guys or relatives, I think, of Sally Hudson's, and they stopped, you know. And he said, "Well, you guys want a moose?" And they were hunting. He said, "Sure." They said, "Well, these guys got one." They went down there and quartered it up, and he got, well, if they wasn't there, probably, you know, what would have happened? Just lay there and spoiled. Some guy shot one over here one time. All he done was just took the hindquarters, you know, and the head, and the rest was laying there. And Walt Woods happened to come along just a little bit after that. And there was, so he took the meat home. It didn't, otherwise, it would have spoiled, you know. That ain't everybody, but there's a lot of it going on. I know that around here, there's a lot of it going on.
Well, what do you think about the game laws then that they have?
Well, they got a lot of game laws I don't agree with at all, you know, like this aerial hunting, get the wolves, you know. There's all kinds of wolves in a country, and there's places that they ain't can't get them, you know. Let them keep them down. They'd rather eat a moose than a wolf, you know. And that's what it amounts to.
Did you ever see many cases where wolves had gotten into a moose?
I found all kinds of moose and caribou killed by wolves, and they never come back to them. And I was trapping, you know, just eat a little bit and never show up and they'll come back again when there's lots of game. If the game is scarce, they'll come back. Like Don told me just the other day, coming from Fairbanks, he see out there, they dragged the moose down. He said, all over there fighting with something. He said, a bunch of wolves out there someplace between around Tolovan. This guy, one guy that was hunting wolves here, I don't know if you knew him, he's a, Hutchison was his name. He shot 200 one year by himself. He didn't even have a gunner. And he across the river from Fairbanks, he told me that there's a lot of moose there. And he found, I forget how many kills, moose kills. And he'd go and play around them, you know, go to them in early in the morning or at night and catch these wolves. And then he'd get them, you know. And he'd tell that to the game commission. He said, "I'll take yous out and show you these kills." And they wouldn't, of course, wasn't interested at all. They knew. You know, you like the way I look at it now, like if there's any time too many moose or too much caribou, just leave the open the season longer, you know, so people can get it. And then after they get so many, close it down. Like here now, last several years, you know, they had this antlerless season here, you know. They were shooting all the cows and calves and everything, you know. Well, where's the moose? There's no moose now. And there was always a lot of moose around here, you know.
Well, what do you think about some guys say that wolves usually just get the weak or the diseased?
That's just nothing than a lot of... I've seen 2-year-old moose, you know, and calves killed and everything, you know. That's in caribou the same way. They follow the caribou, get them, and every time they want one, they'll drag it down, you know. That, I don't believe that at all. I've seen moose. I found a few moose that just the lungs or the nose and through there eat up young moose, you know.
Is that what the wolves would go for?
Yeah, they'll go around, get the heart and liver and stuff like that, or tongue in there and chew the nose off and stuff and leave there. I found several of them, and nobody can tell me any difference. And I've set traps around them, and they never have come back, you know. Be there all winter, never have come back there. Because there's a lot of game around. There's lots of caribou and that around. You know, they you know how nature wolves, they like to hunt, you know. That's just, they're running whenever they get hungry. I suppose there's something handy, a pack of them. They just go and get something fresh, drag it down. That's one thing nobody can make me believe, you know, that the weak and the old and the disease and all that. That's just nothing. You think a moose, a pack of wolf is going to go and drag down an old skinny moose when there's a nice, good, fat one? Why, common sense tells you.
Well, how about when you were out trapping and there's lots of guys killing game, you know, especially to feed your dogs and stuff like that. Was there any time that it seemed like you get some character in the country that's killing off everything?
Well, you find them. You find a lot of that going on, yeah. There's a lot of guys, just anything they see, they'll kill. Regardless what it is, if it's a rabbit or ducks or birds or anything, you know, just they want to be shooting something. There's all kinds of that.
Well, what do you say to a guy like that?
Well, the only thing you can do is turn him in if you want to catch a guy like that. They picked up all kinds of them guys, you know, that had a big shot, all kinds of game, you know, when they wasn't supposed to, you know. That's one thing about the law. If you didn't have the law, like game wardens and that, there's guys that just keep, they just keep shooting anything and keep on. This way it keeps them down a little bit anyway. They're scared. I've seen a lot of them guys in my time.
Why do you think they do that?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. There's just guys that's just bloodthirsty that way. Just like to see something, to shoot something. That's the whole thing, you know. Now, look at the other people, you know. They'll never shoot nothing else they need it, you know. They'll never shoot nothing. Why guys going around shooting these grouse and everything when they're mating and all that stuff, gotta have their young and that. And there's all kinds of them doing that, you know. There's all kinds, like a lot of them shooting these tommy gun in the winter. After you get in the middle of the winter or something like that, sure, if you're out and you're absolutely hungry or something like that, you'll eat anything. But not to eat one of them things, all dried up and scrungy, there's nothing to them. Why shoot them? You let them go and there'll be just that many more come summer, you know. They'll breed and... If a guy don't protect the game, you know, himself, what's going to happen? There won't be any. You can go on a trap, like when I was trapping Martin and that, I'd just take so many and I'd quit. And I'd go back every year and I'd do the same, you know. It's a little bit different with link and that, because they move, you know, when there's no rabbits, you got no link. But you get in the marten country, you know, they'll hang around there all the time, you know. Of course, they just live on small game, but you can go back just about every year, you know. And like, you got a beaver line, if you're on a certain creek by yourself, nobody bother you, you know. Like, we'd go and we'd trap, and me and my brother and that, we'd take so many every year and quit. you know, or take a couple, one or two out of a house, you know, big ones, and quit. And every year you can go back and do the same. You can get your limit with no trouble at all. But if you go there and camp right by a hole and get them all, the young ones and big ones, well, what's there? Nothing. You can wipe anything out. You can go like a lot of these places, trap marked, and you can go in there and start early, and you stay there and trap late. You'll go back the next year, you'll get nothing. You'll get damn few, you know. Well, anything, same as where foxes and all that hang around in the area. You just stay there and trap late, you know, and catch them all, you know, clean them out pretty good. See how many you get the next year. No, you got the trapper. That's one reason, like in Canada, you know, they got different. They had these registered lines in certain areas you'd go on and nobody else could go in there. The police wouldn't let you in there. Well, them guys would be for years on them lines, and they took care of their lines, you know, because that was their living. But there's another thing now. These guys with airplanes, they're just going all over, camping, clean it out, take everything, move to another place. Well, I know guys trapped around Lake Minchumna. They're at they're trapping beaver and all that stuff, and every year these guys is coming right in their lakes, you know, and clean them out, you know. And they'd go back, them guys would let them breed up, you know. They just take so many. There's a lot of that going on all over. I know a guy was telling me there he's trapped, and that he quit trapping. He's just doing like I was telling, take a few beaver. And you're a feller, some guy come in after he left. He found out later. He went and he had already had the holes chopped. He's trapping, catching the rest of the beaver in his holes. The feller had an airplane.
Yeah, some of those airplanes we heard about.
There's all kinds of what you gotta do. You can't do nothing to the guy. The only thing there's no law that said he can't. The only thing is if you're a better man and go there and knock his can off, you know. What protection would you get from the game commission if you went there and said, well, this guy's trapping my beaver? Say, well, he's got just as much right to trap him as you got. That's what this country should have had for years, you know, these trap lines, you know, where register, where guys are years. And
why do you think they never got those?
Don't ask me. It's just the guys, trappers, wanted them for years, but they just want to bring any law like that in effect, you know. Right around here, when the moose start, they had this antler season around here. We had a petition out to try to stop it around here. They just ignoring it. They never done a thing about it. Till now, there ain't no moose. Now they've been around here asking a few years they interviewed. He said to me, what do you think about closing the season altogether? I said, you mind just as well. There's no moose anyway. So they took that analyst off, and they closed the season down to 10 days or whatever it was, 15. Well, what's the use having a season when there ain't no moose? You'll keep a lot of people out of here from hunting. It will give them a chance to come back if you close it, because they'll move in, wander in, you know.
There are a lot of people from Fairbanks who come out to Manly.
Huh? There'd be one car at holidays and Sundays and weekends. Sometimes I bet the dust wouldn't be settled. they'd be in here just one right after another.
Well, when you first got here, didn't people want to, some guys want to make Manly a kind of a resort area anyway?
Well, this hot spring's been here, and different guys, some of these business people, you know, always wanted, you know, like a resort. And
what do you think about that?
Well, to me, I'm not for it myself, because I'd rather live in some hick town than have a bunch of people around, but you don't go just by me. Everybody, different people, you know, got their own ideas.
Well, were there in the 30s, let's see. What did the town look like in 34? What kind of buildings were there?
Well, the same thing. No change. Same thing. Log cabins. But all them cabins around here was all cabins. They were cabins that was made, you know. So many of them was made during, well, there was new cabins coming up now and then, but there's old cabins that was built here when the camp was good during the, you know, when the mines is good.
When was that mostly? When was that mostly?
Those well, cabins? 1908, and that, I guess, is when this camp was hit, 1907, 1908. There's a lot of people around here then, you know. I guess there's about 3,000 people right in this town at one time, you know. Well, back and forth, you know, to the diggings. See, there was a lot of men around here then. They were, all that ground was opening up, you know, and lots of prospectors and lots of miners, guys mining, had big crews. And,
Did you get many tourists those days?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't around here. That was before my time, I suppose. But them days, there was a lot of prospectors and people around, you know, prospecting, which was lots of chances then, you know. There was lots of country that nobody was in. There's going on these creeks and, of course, there's finding new creeks. And then there was, like everything else, there's businessmen and lots of woodcutters and building roads and trappers and
well, now in the 30s, was there that bathhouse over there?
Yeah, there been a bathhouse, I guess, around there all the time. There was a good bathhouse when I first come around there, and then of course Frank Manley had a big place there before it burnt down, you know. But Browning had a bathhouse there, Tex Browning. When I come around here, he had a good big bathhouse.
What'd that look like?
Well, it was built out of lumber, but he had a great big pool, and he had a big dressing room in it and everything. And it finally got old, you know, and they burnt it down. And that was then when they built this little one. Me and Bob Byers and Bob Isaacson, we built that one, but then been kind of remodeling it a little bit. But that was a good bathhouse, the one before that big one. Had a big tank. And
how deep was that tank?
Oh, it was about 6 feet, I guess, something like that. About 5 feet. It's pretty deep. Pretty deep. Yeah. I'd say about 5 feet, roughly, maybe 4.5, somewhere in there.
One big pool, did people all jump in together?
Oh, yeah, one big pool. Well, they had bathing suits and everything, and they had dressing rooms, and they had steam pipes going all through there, you know. You could go in there in 70 below, and it is just like in a dressing room like it is in here. That was in a... It is now.
Kind of slipped a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't called Manly then, was it? This town.
They just called it Hot Springs. And then I think where they started. This Manly Hot Springs is, they was getting mail and everything was pretty well mixed up with Circle Hot Springs, you know. And so they decided to name it after Frank Manly, which he did spend a lot of money around here at one time, you know. Named it Manly Hot Springs.
Did everybody agree on that name?
Well, I don't know if it was the postmaster who, of course, a lot of them didn't, a few of them didn't agree on, but it didn't bother me one bit, but I didn't care what they named it. Just Well, what's the difference? It was a good name. A guy spent more money around here and done more in the early days than anybody. He had to build a big hotel and these mines out here and everything. I myself thought it was all right. I had a little credit coming. And he was quite a operator all over the country, you know, in Fairbanks and down in Iditarod. And he spent a lot of money, that guy did, around.
Well, people that were against it, what did they want?
Oh, I don't know. Everybody probably named after themselves, you know. I didn't pay no attention. You just find any place on anything that everybody would agree. Now, I want to see it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It's helpful to know how come they disagree, mm-hmm. too. So, were you getting your mail here then? Getting your mail here?
Oh, Belgium? Yeah.
A lot of times guys who are out tracking everything, spend all their time out, they don't bother much with mail. They don't write much letters or get many letters. How is that with you?
Never bothered me when I'd come in. If I had any mail, I didn't write too much them days anyway. I kept in contact with a few people. But the ones that howling all is about, like when the dogs that come in, you're hauling the mail, you know, they just about have a fit if a dog team didn't make it one day, you know, or got real cold, and they'd be out in 70 below. They never stop, you know, if something'd come up. But you're laying around here sometimes for days when an airplane can't get in, you know, the weather's bum, they just can't get in.
And people get all perturbed about not getting the mail.
There used to be a guy here, old Pete Million was his name. He lived out in Woodchopper there, and he said they were running, looking up and down the trail, looking for the mail. He said half of them, all they got is a Surgeon Roper catalog coming. He used to get it.
Well, so when did people start leaving the area around, like Woodchopper? And
well, when they started pulling out of there was when the Second World War come on. See, all the mines had quit and taken the machinery out of it, and they all went, so many of them went up Fairbanks and places, went to work, you know, on the bases. And then all the young guys, of course, they slapped them in the army.
Well, that's when you went in too, huh?
Yeah.
How was it? You got drafted or what?
I got drafted, yeah.
Well, where did they send you to?
I stayed in Alaska all the time. I went to Fort Richardson and then down in the Aleutian Islands and down in there.
Did you keep real busy then too?
Oh, well, you know what the army was. They're always doing something wrong most of the time. It is worse on us guys, like that was living out in the hills all our life, you know. Well, I was about 28 when I went in the army, you know. I was living, you know, I was on my own so much, you know, and then taking orders and all that stuff. It was then these young guys, you know, 20 years old and 21, well, they didn't know any better.
That was pretty hard to take orders. Yeah.
So what was that like? And, you know, what was that like? Well, when you first got drafted, what do you think about that?
Well, the war was on. You know, we knew we had to go. You know, that's for a cause. That was the only reason.
You knew you were going to be drafted?
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
So everybody else was being drafted around you
too? Oh, yeah.
So what did they have you do? What was your job in the Army?
Well, I was in the infantry there. And we went in and 297 Infantry. They used to call it the Fighting 297. There's all Alaska guys in there. They'd go down to the wet PX and beat up on a Fort Infantry, get beared up. He said the only battle the Fort Infantry ever lost is with the 297 Infantry. Then they'd put them off limits. And there's a bunch of toughers in that 297, all trappers and miners and loggers. And they come in from all over. They ship them there to take their training, you know.
Was that pretty tough on the officers?
Oh, they were the pretty bunch of renegades, the men, you know, the common souls, you know. Oh, they'd go up to town and come back when they felt like it, most of them, no passes.
You ready to spend a lot of time in a brig?
Oh, I never spent no time. I should have been in there lots of time, but I got by with it. Never caught up with me and a lot of us. Oh, they were pretty lenient around Fort Richardson in there. Then when you went down on the island, there's no place you could go. You were stuck on an island, you know.
Well, what did you do in the Aleutians?
Well, we was down there going from one island to another, you know, see if there's any Japs on them. Of course, we knew they was on Kiska Island and Attu there, until they run them off in Attu.
Were you involved in that one?
I was down there, yeah. I was on all them islands. Our outfit, we used to call us the scout outfit. We'd go on all them islands, they'd dump us off, see if there was any Japs on them.
What were those islands like? What do they look like? What do those islands look like?
They're all bare, nothing on them, you know. There ain't even a bush on most of them. Just grass, nothing but grass.
So what would you do? You'd just walk around looking for people?
Oh, yeah, just look around, see if there's any. They were on a lot of them islands, you know. They had scouting parties, too, you know. Then they pulled out, went to Kiska and that, too, you know. They were on all them islands. Not many men, you know. They didn't have no camps or nothing, just.
So did you ever see any Japanese guys?
Well, I never got to know, really know. I was in Attu, I was at Attu when they were fighting down there. I was in Massacre Bay, but there was 25 of us. We was a reserve, you know. We could see them from the bay where they were battling, you know, but there was a bunch of our outfit was up in the action, you know, all the time. Then we went on Shimian there. There's supposed to have been Japs down there, and they took a bunch of us down there. They were there, but they already left. I guess they took them off with subs or something. I don't know. They were just, like I said, probably a scouting party, I don't know. The Air Corps is supposed to spot some down there, but we never found them. They was gone. We come down there. Of course, then when we landed on Kiska, the Japs is gone. They just pulled out before that. But that was a big, they had a lot of Japs on there. They had camps all over, you know.
So then you stayed on that too or something?
No, we went, we was down there until the fighting was over. Then we went on down to Shimya. We stayed there a while and on an outpost there. Then we went back to ADAC. We rendezvoused back. That was the headquarters. We went back to ADAC and they got a big convoy. Then we landed in Kiska, but they already pulled out, you know. But, of course, nobody knew it. We went all over them camps, you know.
Now, who was the first guy in your outfit to make the Raisin Jack?
Oh, I don't know. All them, there was the islands is full of Okies and everything. Them hillbillies from Tennessee and Kentucky, they had stills and on every island practically after a while. I was down there in ADAC when that was the last outpost down there, and there was more moonshine. There was a whole bunch of them birds from down in the south there, you know, in the 807 engineers and engineer outfits, Air Corps, and they had stills going and making rays and jack and anything. You could sell anything down there that had alcohol in. And they'd pay anything for it. There's no place to spend your money. No place. They had nothing in the PXs when you first went around there, nothing. You couldn't even get tobacco. You'd have to stand in line to get a package of cigarettes or a box of snus or cigar. And I didn't smoke in myself. And I'd go around different outfits, you know. They'd get in line and get a package of cigarettes or a sack of Bull Durham or some snus or cigar and give it to the guy, you know, buddies that smoked. Then later on, of course, it got, you know, after the, but geez, with down there, bum grub too, you know, fresh stuff like fresh meat and that, there's nothing like that around. Spam and corned beef and hash. And I remember one time in an ADAC, there was rationing with the 807 engineers and a bunch of meat come in, pork chops, and them cooks, they put them all in big kettles and boiled them. And holy was them doggies, I thought they was going to have a riot, you know, they going to hang them. They had a lot of good, but them cooks could not cook nothing. I don't know. There was, you know how the army was. Like one guy on KP there, and that's all he knew how to make was hotcakes. That's all, he was supposed to have been a cook. And he said, I'm not a cook, I'm a welder, he said. That was my, and he said, the year they made a cook out of me. And he was a welder, got him in the kitchen. Well, that's just the way they were, you know. There was a guy I know, he cooked on American cricket, Harry Larson was his name, and he was born in Alaska. And he was a good cook. What I mean, he was a good cook, and he was like the rest of us. He got drafted in the Army. And I met him after the war in Fairbanks, and he went worked in for Live and Good Plastics. I said, what did you do in the Army? I thought he'd be in a kitchen cooking. He said, I was in the infantry. I said, was you cooking? He said, I never seen a kitchen, only with on KP. And he was a cook, that guy. What I mean, a first-class cook. When I first went in the Army, they was drafting guys. There was a guy here, he was a driller. Johnny Evans was his name. He's drilling for Clary Hill. And I come in there in the Army here, he's a cook. I said, are you a cook? You know, sure I'm a cook. This is the best job in the Army. He said, come on.
Howdy.
Hello, Frank.
Hello.
What are you wandering around?